So it's 2021, and we are back with another meeting of the EdTech Club. And this week, I know you're all ready. Let's talk politics. Okay, maybe that's not the most exciting thing you could hear right now. I understand. But this month marks the beginning of another biennial session of the Texas legislature. You see, here in TCEA's home state of Texas, our legislature meets every 2 years. So when the session starts, there's a lot to do. And when it comes to education policy, there's going to be a lot of ground to cover this session. I don't think I have to wax poetic about all the changes we've seen in education in the past couple of semesters, but those changes are going to influence how things get organized, get funded, get taught. And so here at TCEA, we work to advocate for solutions and policy prescriptions developed with our experts and with our board of directors. So to give us a grasp on what's going to be happening in education in this legislative session, we brought back Jennifer Berglund, our Director of Government Relations here at TCEA, to take us through the priorities that TCEA will be talking about during this legislative session and the issues that might dominate education debates. It sounds like a lot, and, well, frankly, it is, but it's important stuff. So if you're interested in knowing what education policy is going to look like in Texas and potentially beyond, this is the meeting for you. We're going to cover all of that ground, and it all starts right now. Hey there, folks. Welcome back to the EdTech Club, the podcast from TCEA all about education technology. And this week, we're talking education and tech policy with our Director of Government Relations, Jennifer Berglund. So I won't build up anymore. Here's our conversation with Jennifer.
My name's Jennifer Berglund, and I lead the advocacy efforts for the association. I do some training for the association as well, but my official title is the Director of Government Relations.
We, of course, are based out of Texas. A lot of our members are here in Texas and teaching in Texas, not all of them. But when it comes to setting policy priorities or even examining the policies that are out there, one of the first lenses we have to go to is our state. After all, the states are the ones who are more or less in charge of education. Obviously, the federal Department of Education has a kind of coordinating and funding role. But when it comes to setting policies, it's usually at the state level. And here in Texas, we have a new biennial legislative session coming up this month in January. It begins. These only happen once every 2 years, as I mentioned. So when this session comes around, it becomes important for membership organizations and professional organizations like ours to look at the policies, look at the challenges and the things that are happening, and make recommendations based on their expertise and their experience in the field. So this year, one of the things we have to consider, right, is digital learning. We've had this sort of ongoing experiment. We know that we'll take some lessons from it in the future, and some things we might leave behind. When it comes to digital learning, which will always be relevant even outside of a pandemic for accessibility needs, for future health crises or other kinds of things, what do we need to be successful in digital learning?
That's a great question, Andrew, because, just like you mentioned, there's a lot of talk about digital learning, remote learning, and has it been successful? And if it hasn't been successful, why? And just like with any type of learning, there are certain components that must be present in order for students to be able to thrive in the instructional process. And these components really haven't changed over the years, although the technology and the capabilities of the technology have changed. But it begins with good connectivity. You need some way for the students to be able to access the digital content. And so connectivity would include internet access. And currently now that includes home access. And to be honest, for several years, we've been advocating that home access was an important piece of this puzzle because students do much of their work at home. And the pandemic has shown a spotlight on where that access is not happening. And it's not surprising to us, those of us who've been following this, but I think it has caught some people by surprise that they didn't realize just how inequitable internet access is. So first of all, you've got to have good broadband, not only at school, but also at home. But also part of the connectivity piece is your devices. Students need to have something that will allow them to access that. And so more and more states and school districts are beginning to see that truly, if we're going to have a good digital learning environment, every student needs some type of device, with whether it's a Chromebook or a laptop. A smartphone is really inadequate for the kind of work that we're talking about, but it is something that you can do, you know, students can use in a pinch. The other thing that they need, the second thing, is quality content. And that's just good digital resources that school districts can either purchase, or if they're open education resources, they can adapt those to meet their needs. But students need to have good quality instructional materials that are digital. That seems logical, but it is something that we have to consider. So we're moving rapidly from print to digital content. The third thing is, of course, is teacher readiness. And we've known this for years. Teachers know this. They need continual professional development. I remember the first time I was a technology director in a school district in Texas for about 15 years prior to this role. And I remember the first time I took a budget to the school board, and I was very nervous about it because it was my first time to do that. And I was actually asking for $1 million, which they had never spent that kind of money on technology. And one of the things that we said we needed the money for was professional development. And I'll never forget, one of the school board members looked at me and says, well, what are you going to do once you get all the teachers, you know, trained? They're not going to need training anymore. So what are you going to do? You won't need that money. And I thought, oh boy, do I have a lot of education that I need to do with the school board, because the technology is constantly changing. Therefore, professional development is going to be an ongoing piece to make sure not only can they use the technology, but do they know how to use it wisely and use good pedagogy skills using that technology. So that is so important. The next piece then is, of course, student digital literacy. Can students access and use the technology for learning? I think there's a real misnomer by school boards and legislators and even maybe parents and the public, and that is, these kids always are using technology. So why do they need to be trained on how to use it? Well, just because you know how to use Instagram or Snapchat or Facebook or YouTube does not know you know how to use it instructionally. And so it is making sure students have the kind of skills, digital skills, they need in order to be able to create and to be able to research and collaborate for instructional practices. And then the last thing that they need is technical support. I think one of the things that a lot of people don't realize is that in many cities, not only in Texas, but across the nation, school districts have the most complicated and largest networks of any entity in the community. Now, this wouldn't be true, of course, in big major areas, or if they have a big university in their town, that wouldn't be true. But for many school districts, the technical network at the school is more complicated than any other entity in that community. But on the other hand, many of the people that are running it were former teachers that have had to learn on the go and how to make all of this work. And so you've got this ongoing training that you have to do with your technical support staff. And then also, of course, you just have to have funding for that. You have to be able to provide the kind of devices, network devices, and there's always upgrades and those kind of things. So those are the five components: connectivity, quality content, digital teacher readiness, student digital literacy, and technical support. But, and then I've got to say, I'm probably cheating because I'm underlining all of that, is they need to be supported by district and state leadership and funding. So those, those two things kind of are just assumed that are necessary to make this work.
Yeah, and I can see how all of those aspects rely on each other, right? You need all of those parts kind of firing so that the engine can run fully. And, you know, I think it's important to remember that piece, that anecdote you told about, well, once you're trained up on something, why would we spend money to do more training? But of course, you know, that's absurd once you start to think about it, because, you know, I grew up in an age where we were taught technology in schools. We were taught how to use computers. We were taught how to do some basic coding. All of those things we learned back then are more or less irrelevant now. You know, it was fun in the early 2000s to learn how to program Flash animations, but you can't even use Flash anymore. Just a small example like that, you can kind of see how it starts to grow. And of course, you look then at the context of our state, like Texas, that had this big shift from mostly rural to mostly urban today. But we also have to consider those connectivity issues in different places, right? There's a big digital divide in rural areas because they're underpopulated, but there's a big digital divide in economically disadvantaged urban areas where there are big populations. So all of those things start to touch on each other. I know, and some of the specific recommendations that we've put out is to establish an office to coordinate broadband efforts for all Texans, provide a broadband plan that'll guide state and local agencies, improve accuracy of broadband mapping, which would require some kind of process to verify that data, determine the funding infrastructure and how to set up the permanent physical infrastructure, and some other stuff. So this feels like it's probably central to what some of the education discussions in the Texas legislature are going to be this year. But there are other things we're always kind of monitoring. One of the things is the technology and instructional materials allotment. I know a lot of folks in education in Texas have to deal with this, what's called TEMA. Could you tell us what the tech and instructional materials allotment is and what the priorities for that are?
Yes, I'd love to. The TEMA is something near and dear to my heart because we worked on that piece of legislation back in 2011. 2011 is when the budget crunch happened, and most states and school districts lost a tremendous amount of funding. In fact, the state education funding dropped by $5 billion. And so one of the things that they did up until that time, school districts received $30 a student for technology. And then they also, the State Board of Education funded the textbooks. So the school districts would just select their textbooks and tell the TEA, the Texas Education Agency, what books they wanted, and TEA just shipped them to them. And they didn't buy them directly. Well, a piece of legislation passed in 2011 that completely changed all of that. First of all, they got rid of the tech allotment and they created the at that time, it was just called instructional materials allotment. We got them to add the word technology to remind districts that it is to be used for technology. So you can see a hint there, Andrew. School districts have not traditionally used that fund for technology, even though it's always been allowed. So we got it changed in 2017 to technology and instructional materials allotment. But this allotment is set up so that now school districts are given a pot of money and they get to choose their instructional materials on their own. And they don't even have to select from the state board approved list anymore, which was huge. It allows school districts complete flexibility. But it also, because they eliminated the instructional, the technology allotment, they gave them, school districts, the ability to use this allotment for technology as well. Anyway, the TEMA is to be used for technology, which includes things like, it does include devices, professional development for technology, as well as just a variety of devices. So it has pretty broad flexibility. But the problem is school districts, because of the increasing cost of instructional materials, school districts have rarely used TEMA for technology. But they also save a lot of their money at the end of the biennium because it's all they can roll it forward. So they kind of hoard it. And that's probably a wrong word, but I will tell you how it happened. One session, they did not have enough money in the legislature did not give them enough money to even purchase the state board approved instructional materials. So therefore, they had to go into their own budget. So it became like a depression type of scenario. You know, they had to do without. So therefore, now they're saving every time they get a chance. So they don't ever want that to happen again. So, but now there's a very healthy amount that is not used at the end of the biennium that could be used. And also, the state board several years ago started structuring the instruction, the proclamation. A proclamation is just the textbook list that they put out and let vendors or publishers bid on. And basically, so it becomes a list of state board approved textbooks. Okay. So, and that happens every 2 years. And the state board decided, well, we'll have one biennium where we know the proclamation is going to be pretty heavy. But then the next, we'll pair it with a biennium the next 2 years where it's not very heavy so that school districts could use the funding for technology. The problem, however, is that school districts don't really know that. They're not using it for that. And the reason why I can tell you, well, number one, I track it. I've been tracking it since 2011. The highest percentage that's ever been used is 15%. Usually it's around 10% of the entire fund. And the fund can be easily over $1 billion. So 10% of $1 billion is being used by school districts for technology. And that never reaches the amount that they would have received if they still had a tech allotment. So I know I'm probably getting way into weeds with you, but the problem is school districts need to begin to use the hope. Let me go back. The hope by the legislators is that this would be a dual purpose fund that school districts could slowly, gradually shift to digital. And this fund would be used as a strategic pot of money to be able to do that. Unfortunately, it's kind of just been a fund to pay textbooks to do what school districts kind of have always done, and that is just use it for textbooks. So,
and so as we look at that, what are the recommendations to make sure that this funding can be used in ways that benefit schools and districts?
And I'm sorry, Andrew, it's hard for me to do this in a podcast without it getting too complicated. But
no, that's just how it goes.
So suffice it to say, the state board does help decide how much money goes into the TEMA because they run the permanent school fund, which is a big savings account. And a percentage of that saving account, the permanent school fund, the state board decides what percentage they're going to take off of that fund and send it to the legislature for educational purposes. And 50% of what the state board sends to the legislature goes into the TEMA fund. And I will tell you this biennium, the state board is giving the legislature one of the largest amounts that I've seen. It's 4%. So it'll be well over $1.5 billion. So 50% is $1.5 billion. So it's almost $3 billion they're giving to the state. So the legislature will take that $3 billion, divide it in half, send it into, give it to the districts, and then the TEA will divide that up, you know, per population to the states. And again, the number I'm giving you is a round number. So if anybody's listening to it, don't go banking on that amount. I'm just kind of giving you some round numbers there. So what one of the proposals is that the state board should take into account how much, you know, they know what the books are. There are certain subjects, for instance, language arts is one of those. It's usually very expensive. And then there are some that are not so expensive. And so basically what they're trying to get this proposal is make sure that if you're going to have a big proclamation, that you send enough money over that will cover that 75% of the amount of money you send over will pay for the books. The rest of it will be money that could be used for technology. Does that make sense?
Right. To encourage the school authorities to actually use that fund.
That's right. And the second one is probably that we've never recommended this, but I think we've gotten to the point where I think it's time. And that is to stipulate a certain percentage of the TEMA money should be used for technology purchases. So we're basically telling school districts that a certain percentage should be used on technology. And we haven't really, but basically we haven't said exactly how that could be done. We've come up with a couple of proposals. One would be the commissioner would decide that. So he would know if it's a heavy proclamation biennium or not. And if it's a heavy one, then maybe the percentage would be low, maybe 10%. If he knows that this is the biennium where the state board has purposely made it to be where it's the textbooks aren't going to cost that much, that percentage might go higher to 25 to 30%. But do something that would send the signal that to school districts, no, this is a technology fund as well, and you need to be using it that way. So we've never recommended that, but that is something that we've recommended this time.
Right. Sort of two factors on that, the TEMA. It's a technology and materials allotment. So two ways to make sure that gets spent on the stuff it's meant to be spent on is one, to cap the percentage that can be used on those non-technology, if you will, materials. But then also to require a percentage to be spent on the technology aspect, right?
Right. And when we say cap the amount, what we're saying is that basically have them estimate the cost of the materials and that it shouldn't exceed more than 75%. So school districts could spend less because school districts do not have to buy books off of the, you know, state board approved list. They do not have to purchase the most expensive books. But the most expensive books would only be, should be estimated only at 75% of the amount of money that's being placed in the TEMA account. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. If I wanted to go through and buy the whole list from the proclamation, it still wouldn't cost, if you will, more than 75% of that allotment.
Yes. That is the proposal.
And so I'm looking at these ideas and recommendations. Let's say I'm State Senator Andrew Rausch from Bastrop. And
sounds good, Andrew. These proposals. I like it.
thank you so much. And so maybe I think this sounds to me like a reaction to all the virtual learning we've had to do in this past year, but that won't last forever. Why should I put the focus on digital learning and the technology materials and things like that?
That is a great question, because I think people are, you know, we're all wondering, is this a major shift in education, or once the pandemic is over, will we go back to doing the things the way we've always done them? I'm one of those that believe this is a big shift, and this is giving districts the ability to see how technology can facilitate learning in new and different ways. Some districts are doing it better than others, granted. And, you know, some of the barriers are, and I loved how you emphasized that when I went over those five different things, components of digital learning, that they really need to be present all at the same time. And that's always been the problem. You know, is making sure that all of those things are happening and firing at the same time. So in some districts, that hasn't been happening. They've some of those components haven't been present. Therefore, their remote learning experience hasn't been pleasant or successful even. But in many districts, it has. And so I do think that, so if I was to talk to you or your staff members about why this was important going forward, is because there are advantages that those students will have that using the technology that they wouldn't have if they went back to purely paper and pencil. And one big one, Representative Rausch, is that TEA is recommending that all of the tests by the year 2022-23 will be digital. And we are, you know, we're in the minority of states that are not doing that now. And there's lots of advantages of doing online testing. But online testing will require the same kinds of components that make digital learning succeed. And so, you know, we have the ability to transform the way we assess students. Just think about this, Andrew, our Representative Rausch, is if I could test students throughout their year as they're doing their normal educational process, but I'm pulling data from their interactions with the technology so that by the end of the year, I already have all the data I need on that student's growth. I'd never have to do an end-of-year assessment. Instead, because I'm using technology throughout the year, doing the assessment is naturally happening. And that's the future of assessment. But in order for that to take place, every kid has to have a device. You have to have good instructional materials. You have to have good broadband. The teachers have to know how to do it. The students have to be able to know how to digitally handle all of that. So there's lots of pluses for the state, but you are right. It is not a one-time investment. And And just recently, the state invested quite a bit of money to help students through the pandemic. They received about $1 billion. And everyone is applauding the state for doing that. They used the CARES funding for it. And in fact, I'm so appreciative of TEA and the governor for making that a priority. However, that equipment will fail in about 3 to 5 years. And so getting districts to see the TEMA as a strategic fund that can help pay for that, I think is critical to answering this.
Well, I was just thinking, I mean, I can see how, you know, we heard a lot of stories during virtual learning during this pandemic about, you know, schools losing track of students, the engagement kind of plummeting, which isn't surprising. But I have to imagine when a parent might need to take their kid and park in front of the McDonald's to get Wi-Fi to do homework after their work shift or whatever, that's going to make it a lot harder to keep track of. And I can see why building that infrastructure means that you are at least a little bit ahead of that the next time something disruptive happens. I can also see how when it comes to materials and investing in digital, it's not simply a question of starting to invest put all our eggs in the tech basket, but rather to expand our basket so that it includes not just traditional schooling in person and traditional materials, but also a virtual or a distance or a technology component for when it's needed or for when it can enhance learning. So it's not so much a trading one for the other, zero sum kind of a thing, but actually just expanding your toolkit.
I like the way you said that, expanding their basket and helping them see. And I think that's one of the reasons why I think this is a bigger shift, because I think the curriculum directors of school districts are now going to become more enthusiastic about this. They've always agreed with it mentally, but where it let's face it, this is a major shift, which means there's pain points along the way, because you're changing everything the way a teacher does what she does or he does. And it requires a lot of effort. And so although everyone in education is supportive of using technology, in practice, it's been difficult to get some curriculum directors and specialists to really fully embrace it. But I'm hearing anecdotal stories in different districts where tech directors are so excited because they're not the ones now driving it, because now school districts have had to invest in these digital resources, not just the devices, but now they have good instructional materials that can do things that a flat textbook can't do. Those curriculum people are getting excited. And that also will help drive the TEMA to be used in more for technology as well. So, you know, it may become a moot point. We don't need to tell districts they need to spend 25% of their TEMA on technology, because all of a sudden they may hopefully choose to do that. So, and when I say they, I'm talking about people other than the tech directors. We did a survey, Andrew, and I've done it at least 3 different times. So at least over the last six years, I've been surveyed the districts, and the data hadn't changed. About 50% of Texas school districts even include a technology director on the committee that decides how the TEMA is going to be used. Well, if you're not even putting a tech person on the committee, they're not even considering. That's one of the reasons why we added the name technology to it, because we wanted to remind people this is not just an instructional materials fund. This is should be used by technology. So that's been part of the problem and I know that because I used to work in a district, and districts function like any entity. the budget is fought over. And, you know, so you have to get in there and make it known that this is an important thing to happen in your district. And I think that this pandemic hopefully is shifting that conversation, and technology will be very much a part of that conversation.
Okay, so we did indeed cover a lot of topics in this meeting, so it might be useful to do some review. This week, we do have some homework. Go ahead and check out the links we've provided in the description for this episode. And if you want to earn a little extra credit on top of that, well, we got you covered there, too. I've got two suggestions. One, if you're interested in these topics and these policies and how they're going to get determined in this session, and especially if you live here in Texas, go ahead and reach out to Jennifer, as she suggested. And also, you can learn more about these topics at our upcoming TCEA convention and exposition partnered with IdeaCon this year. It's coming up in February. It starts February 1st, and there's still time for you to register over at convention.tcea.org. Jennifer will be there talking about these issues. And beyond that, you'll get all kinds of information on the tips, techniques, strategies, all kinds of ideas that the experts and peers are putting together for you. So if you want to see what's on the agenda, go check it out, as I said, at convention.tcea.org. But that's it for this week. I think we've crammed enough information into your head at the beginning of a busy semester. So I will let you go. But until the next time we meet, I'm Andrew Rausch. Thanks for being part of the club. EdTech Club is a production of TCEA. To learn more and to join, go to tcea.org.